Snickers in this motherfucker tonight.
Alrighty, we're back, episode 5-3, which is coincidentally Rob's age.
That is still very true. Still making it work at 53.
BJ's right. Catching up to him.
Yeah, after he is.
Birthday.
Well, no, Rob. Rob's not 53, is he?
No.
You're 53? What are you, like 48? Oh,
no. We ain't 5-0 yet.
Not yet. We cooking it, though. We cooking.
Getting closer.
Yes, sir. I'll be 49.
Mm-hmm. Mm, dang.
Yep. Oh, at 50, shit. I'm going to go ahead and clock on out, dude. At 50, that's it.
Yeah, what's left after that? Golf?
Yeah, punch that time card, baby. It's time to do freaking work.
That's it. That's when you just need to turn in that old man throwing dry flies on a bamboo rod.
That's all you're allowed to fish.
Yeah.
That's all. That's when you're going to go full on 10 karma.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's or,
because that's the only rod that'll fit in his cargo shorts pocket.
Yeah, that's it. I got him on.
With his did you hear that New Balance is making rating shoes now?
Are you serious?
Yeah, man. They're off-white. You go get you some when you turn 50.
Can you mow the grass in them before you go fish?
You can. And the beauty of it is that when you mow the grass, it turns them green. And then when you go wade in the river, it cleans them off. And it attracts grass carp.
That's all. We'll throw green sandworm worms.
I am going to go ahead and just protest those since now. Since you're going to be tracking extra fertilizer into the water.
Mm.
And then we're going to have a big red tide situation in Idaho.
Red tide in Colorado.
Yes.
The Rockies red tide. Thanks to Rob right. Griggs.
So.
I was raping the reds, dropping the red tide. I'm good with that.
That's right. It's not red tide. That's just all the trout eggs oozing out when you walk across the reds.
Look at poor Steve. Man, he's tired as hell, dude.
I'm tired, boys.
It's time for some Andy Griffith and go to bedtime for you, baby.
You need more fishing, Steve.
Dude, I need some. God damn. I've had none.
Monster.
Yeah. Well, me and Steve are in the same boat, literally. So it's up to BJ and Scott to pull this one through.
Bring it on home, boys.
Yep. Oh, where you guys been fishing?
BJ.
Fishing? Oh. I guess last Friday was my 40th birthday. So I went, took the day off work and went with my buddy Andrew and Ed Hankinson, one of our listeners and a friend of mine, and Jeremy from out east. And we fished Big Spring Run. It's over in Cumberland Valley, PA. So it's a limestone spring creek. I've talked about the stream before. Don't know if I ever named it by name, but it's on the – if I tell you I caught wild rainbows and brook trout, you'll figure out what stream it was really fast on the Pennsylvania website. So it ain't no secret. But it was good. I mean, this time of year, you know, early August, it's hard to find cold water in western Pennsylvania. Most of – my stuff's all freestone streams that are in the 70s, so it's smallmouth season here. But, you know, that water was 54 degrees, and it was 93 out, and it felt pretty damn good wet wading in it for the day. So we all caught some fish, wild rainbows, all of us. I had one brookie that I hooked and got about 3 feet from the net and pulled the old quick release on. So, but it was a good day. I saw, man, there's some big fish in that creek, but they're tough, man. It's gin clear all year round, and they're spooky as shit, and you only get a shot or two at them, and they're skittish and gone. So a lot of dry droppers. I was trying to do some nymphing early in some of the faster water, pulled a couple little fish out, and had some little ants and hoppers and droppers. So it was a typical summer day, but it was good. We fished till like early afternoon. It was so damn hot. We were all done. I mean, it was tough. But
yeah, once the fish all started going belly up, it was time to call it.
Yeah, well, the only one, just the ones I threw in the grass went belly up. So actually, the first fish I caught was on an ant, and it was about a 4-inch little rainbow, and I probably hook set that thing, and I think it flew about 35 feet.
Flying fish.
And I said, oh, shit, you know, because I'm fishing my, I was fishing my 10-foot three weight, and was not, I mean, there's some 20-inch plus rainbows in there, so I wasn't expecting a fish that small to come ripping out of there, but it was fun. We got him back. He swam away fine, so life was good. But it was good. I haven't, you know, Ed and Jeremy, I have not fished with yet. So Ed doesn't live very far from me. He's on the other side of the mountain. So, and he also just recently bought a boat, and we're talking about doing some musky fishing rather soon. So, if anybody wants to send me an 11 weight, I'll be needing it. Thank you. And then Jeremy came over. He lives probably about an hour from that stream. So I love that part of Pennsylvania. It's neat because it's like, it's pretty much flooded farm fields. It's these limestone creeks that come out of the ground, and it literally looks like a flat ass farm field, and there's Amish everywhere, and it smells like cow shit, and there's just this amazing creek in the middle of it. And, it's cool. You know, I've only ever fished out there in the winter, so it was good to get back in the summertime when things were a little bit more happening. I mean, in the winter, them fish kind of don't move at all, so they were moving around pretty good. It was funny. Andrew and I were walking back, and we had only seen little fish for the first couple hours. And we're walking back, and there's this stretch where the creek splits, and one part of it runs along the little road out there, and the other part's further back in. And him and I are just having a conversation. I look out of the corner of my eye, and there's probably a 19-inch rainbow just working this grass bed along the edge. I said, holy shit. He's like, what? I pointed at it, and it kind of cruised back in. And I went all Rambo and snuck through the high grass. It was probably like, you know, 6 feet high grass that I'm sneaking back through trying to not spook this fish. And I get back into where the creek joins up again, and there was probably 6 good big rainbows swimming around and a bunch of smaller ones. And so we hooked into a few fish. All of us, I think, caught some fish out of that stretch, but nothing big, but it was a good day. And it's only a couple hours away from the house, so I'll be getting back out there.
BJ, I don't know if I ever told you this, but I lived in Pennsylvania for 1 year when I was a kid in first grade in New Cumberland.
And, oh, yeah.
My dad was he was in airborne, and I don't know why we went up there, but he was a game warden on for that army base we were on. I can't even remember the name of it. I was in like kindergarten, first grade. So, yeah. Sounds like it's the same area, though.
Well, that's is that close to Harrisburg?
Yes.
Yeah, so that's right along the Susquehanna. I was maybe, oh, shit, dude, 40 minutes southwest of there, probably. But, yeah, all those creeks eventually flow into the Susquehanna. Yeah, so I was,
I don't remember it. I just remember that.
You should go back. There's amazing smallmouth fishing out there.
No kidding.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I'm always down for some smallmouth.
Yeah, Jeremy was, he was funny because Thursday night, Jeremy was hanging out at a friend of his house. And he's sending us in a Facebook Messenger chat pictures of smallmouth that he's catching on topwater. His buddy lives right along the river, and he's out there like right before dark, just throwing topwater flies and just crushing smallies. I was like, ah, shit, man, should just came out early.
So very nice.
I need to find a good, stable fishery around here that has consistent smallmouth that are decent sized. I found a couple, and you know, they were kind of trashed when the floods came and other things happened, but I don't know. There's not a lot around here.
There's a ton around me, but I'm not going to name anything. If anybody wants to know, come fish with me. But
right.
I've had some people share some stuff with me. Actually, Rudy keeps telling me about I'd say a small river where him and I grew up in that area that is loaded with smallmouth and nobody fishes it. So I'm going to get the canoe out today and have somebody drop me off and float, you know, 5-6 miles and just see what's there. See if he's bullshitting me or not.
Nah, he ain't bullshitting.
Yeah, he ain't.
I'm scared of canoes.
I'm scared.
That's awesome.
They're just way too unstable, man. They're just so tippy.
Yeah, especially trying to fly fish out of them. Yeah.
I'm going to make some of those. I wanted to do it last summer. I never got to it. Some of those, what the hell do they call them? The
outriggers?
The outriggers. So.
You should just go to, like, I don't know if you guys have Dick's Sporting Goods or anything like that, but just get a little one-man pontoon and jump in that, dude. That's
You can start hashtagging Dick's Sporting Goods and be, like, pro staff.
Yeah.
Yeah, dude. And then you can put picture
just get a float. Get a float tube.
That's right.
Yeah, let's get a float tube.
And whenever you see rocks, just turn backwards so your feet go over last.
Just so you know, a float tube out here would be a tractor inner tube that we blow up and float the river on. That's a float tube in Pennsylvania.
Oh my God.
Nobody buys float tubes out here.
And you just take some paracord, tie a tarp to it, punch some holes in it for your legs. You'd be good.
All right, good. I can do that.
You'll be good. Although I do think that Outcast would probably ship one to Pennsylvania if you ordered it.
Yeah.
Just a guess. They make really nice ones. Just don't buy any of those cheap-ass, crappy ones off of, like, Amazon, the Chinese ones. Those things are garbage.
Garbage. Yeah.
What about the, those Hobie... fishing kayaks that are all set up for fishing where you've got the little pedals in there and you can cruise around in them and you can stand up in them. They're super stable. I've been thinking about maybe grabbing one of those. They're kind of spendy, but they look pretty damn cool.
Talk to Rachel.
Oh, I know who to talk to. I just don't have the money right now.
But yeah, I hear that.
I got my eye on it.
What did I keep looking at those. What's Serpnak by? That fly craft?
Yeah.
I think that would be money out here on the stuff that
I think so too, because, you know, it's really tippy, just like a canoe.
Yeah, perfect.
No, I shouldn't say that. That's bullshit. No, but I'll tell you, when he first broke his out, I was there for the maiden voyage on the San Juan. And when I first got into that thing, like, I didn't, you know, it's a fucking boat. You step in and when I stepped in, like, it almost came over on me and I'm like, what the fuck? Like, 3 points of contact, holding both sides. I'm like shaking back and forth. The whole boat's moving under me. And I sat down and I'm like, okay, I'm not fucking moving. And then he tried to get in and it almost went over again. And I was like, oh my God, man, we're going to fucking die in this thing. But then once we figured out that, like, you don't put it in deeper water and then try to step into it. You just slide it over into like 4 inches of water and just step right into the middle and sit down and you just go. And so once we figured out like how to get in and out of it, that thing was super stable. And I started like getting pretty comfortable with it and he was rowing and I would standing up fishing. And the cool thing about it was you can like, when you stand up, you kind of like drive your calves into the front of the seat and you wedge the outsides of your boots in between like the pontoons and the floor, because it's an inflated rubber floor, and your boots just freaking lock in there. You could like, you could totally lean back and your boots wouldn't slip out. So once I figured out like how to stand in it and how to fish out of it, it was super, super stable. So, I mean, by the end of the day, I was like, dude, this thing rocks. And dude, we never bumped anything. We'd go through these like super skinny rapids on the one and you'd hear boats just scraping their way down. We'd go over like a rock that was 2 inches under the water, nothing. And then when we'd like pull over to fish on foot, dude, you just pick the whole thing up and set it on shore. Just drag it up onto the rocks. You don't have to anchor. You don't have to do any of that shit. You just like slide it up on the rocks. It's so light. So I think those things are badass, dude. They're pretty cool.
Well, if anybody wants to buy a Sea Arc, I'm selling mine. I'm going to take it down next week and take it to the Sea Arc dealership and put that thing out on consignment.
What the hell is that? Is that the jet boat?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Nice.
Yep, it's going. Yeah, it's still in this winter wrap from last year, dude. I haven't even busted it out. it. So I might charge the battery and take it on down there next week and see what we got and get rid of the damn thing.
Dang.
Dang.
That's the longest you've owned a boat.
This long?
I seem to go through them.
Yeah, this one, I've had it for, this is third season, and then I have a raft, and I love that thing, dude, so, but I use it more than the jet boat, so, yeah. Jet boat's got to go. It's just sitting out there.
Mm-hmm.
It's top of the line. If you know anybody who wants it, man, it's kick of the ass, so let me know.
All right, so now we got 1, 2, 3 of us, and then 9 other people listening that know that Rob's trying to sell his boat. So spread the word. Spread the word.
Yeah, no shit.
This is almost as good a reach as Facebook Marketplace.
Tell your friends.
Heck, yeah.
Well, where you at, Scott? Where you been fishing at?
Oh, just around here. We just been hanging out. I went up to the Broadmoor Fish Camp.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you've heard of that one.
It's
they've got like 120 acres or some shit up there on Terryall Creek, and it's all, you know, they got little cabins there and whatever, and stocked fish. They put a shit ton of palominos in there, so it's like every hole you come up to, you see a couple bananas swimming in circles. That was kind of funny. We stand up on the you know, elevated trail, and it's like, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Dang, I can see 11 palominos from here. I'm looking up in the trees, like, I bet that bald eagle's got his eye on one of those things too.
Hell yeah.
I bet those things feed the raptors more than anything out there.
Dude, so I keep forgetting to tell you and Steve, if for some reason through your chance of talking to people or being out, you know, and doing stuff, I only got to fish it one time, but there's a place right outside of Boulder called Lincoln Hills. Have you ever heard of it?
No.
Is that the club?
Yeah. I only got to fish it once, and it's like Boxwood, but a little bit more wild, and it is uber expensive.
Oh, that's the one on Boulder Creek.
Yeah.
Or South Boulder Creek or whatever it is.
It's on the South Boulder Creek. And, it's
Kurt was telling me about that.
Yeah, it's pretty fun. It's pretty fun. That place was it's pretty legit. I mean, it's $50,000 to join it and then $25,000 a year after that, but that's a little bit out of my price range.
I'm in.
But I got, you should do it.
Let's do it, Steve.
I'm in.
Yeah. What was awesome?
Well,
the guides there were fishing, and you have to have a guide, kind of like Boxwood. But he went, okay, it's time for lunch. So we go into the lodge, which is a massive, massive, massive log cabin. They have a chef. They give you a menu. You order off the menu. It's free drinks. It's whatever you want. It's pretty crazy. It's insane.
Mm-hmm. So that's big pretty much the same MO as the Broadmoor Fish Camp. And I will say that perhaps I'm not their target demographic. And neither is my buddy Craig. So Craig is one of the dudes that we fished with up in Idaho for steelhead. Super, super cool dude. Lives up in Spokane. He just, you know, spends every possible minute he can swinging flies for steelhead, for whatever. I think he's up in Alaska right now with some dudes doing some DIY and some guided trips, swinging for salmon and rainbows and whatever else. So his company, they were, you know, he's went, they selected the Broadmoor for, you know, this big corporate meeting for a bunch of different dealerships across the country and whatever. So they all gathered there, and he was looking at the activities that they had available and said, oh man, they got this fish camp. I can go up there and stay in this cabin. Long story short, he had room for one more. So he called me up and said, hey, would you be interested? And I think, Ron Brown was going to go, but ended up being not available or whatever. So he had a spot to fill. So I was like, oh yeah, let's do it. That sounds like fun. But So, yeah, not really. I mean, if you've never fly fished and you just love to be pampered, that's your place. Like, like you said, you go in, it's free drinks. There's tons of really good food. And it's like you can sit there and drink cocktails out on the patio and on the deck and talk about whatever. And but if you want to go and fish, not so much. So, you know, it was like we actually got into trouble because, as you mentioned, Rob, you have to fish with a guide, which we didn't really know that. And so we just like rigged up a couple rods and went and fished. So, and, I mean, in our defense, it was they couldn't possibly have expected us to actually like go 2.5 hours in the middle of the day without fishing. I mean, like so they're like, yeah, we'll have coffee on at like 6:30 and then breakfast at 7:30. And I was like, well, so what time does the fishing start? And I, oh, you'll head down to the guide shack around 8:30 or so. And like, oh man, we're losing daylight. Like we want to be out there first light fishing, you know? And so we get down there and finally finish breakfast. And it's like, you know, everybody who's staying there all sits around the big giant table and has a sit down meal and they come out and, you know, and announce what they're serving and they set it all up in steam tables and you get your stuff and you sit down and eat. And it's kind of like, you know, I don't know, a little too formal. But so then we finally get out there and start fishing around 9 o'clock. And at like 11:20, the guide's like, all right, guys, we'll give it about 10 more minutes and wrap it up for lunch. And Craig and I are like, dude, like, we just want to keep fishing. Like, we'll pay you to work through lunch. We'll do whatever. Like, we'll just go grab a quick bite. You can grab a bite and we'll just keep fishing. He's like, yeah, they kind of want us to take a lunch. And so I'm like, well, okay, so it's 11:30, like, back down here at 12:30. Well, we'll head back out to the river at like 2:15. So you guys can get a nap in, you can get some work in, you know, you can do whatever. And we're both like, dude, we're here to fucking fish, bro. Like we are here to fish. And so he's like, yeah, well, you know, that's kind of the rules. So 11:30, we go in there and we fucked around for a little while. They brought sandwiches out. We ate a sandwich. We go back to the cabin. We're like, dude, we got like 2 hours. And I go, well, shit, man, I got all my shit with me. Let's rig up a couple rods and go fish. So we went down to the river and just started hanging fish. We're just walking the river, just hanging fish. And then all of a sudden, like, our guide comes walking down. And he's like, man, you guys know you aren't supposed to be fishing without a guide, right? And I'm like, oh, we didn't know that. Sorry, bro. And the head guide had, like, seen us down there and hit up all the rest of the guides like, hey, who are those dudes with? What the fuck? So then he comes down and I'm like, we're like, oh man, we're sorry. And he's like, well, you know, the guides kind of get together at lunch and they talk about, you know, what was hitting and come up with a strategy for where they're going to take the clients in the afternoon. And now you guys have kind of like worked this water. And I go, well, fuck it. We'll just start here then. Like we've already worked this water. So we'll just start here and everybody else can fish, you know, wherever else. So we did that and we continued to hang fish even after, you know, we put all those fish down over lunch. But it's like, dude, you really going to make us sit there from 11:30 to 2:15 not fishing, you know?
That means you're fishing until 8:30 that evening then.
Oh, no, you would think so. But we were done at like 4:45, 5 o'clock, you know, it was like, wait a minute, guys. Like, and then the guide was like, hey, dude, you guys can go fish all you want in the evening. Like, we don't even care. You can go on your own and go fish. And, you know, by that time, we're kind of like, all right, whatever. We'll just hang out. And we went down and fished a little bit more after the guides were done. But then I overheard the guy, our guide, talking to the head guide. And he's like, yeah, man, I'm sorry. I forgot to tell them. And I didn't know they were going to do that. And he's like, I heard him in the guide shack. He goes, dude, those guys know what they're doing. I ain't worried about it. And he's like, it's not like they're out there dragging fish up into the grass or something stupid, you know. He's like, they know the drill. Not too worried about it. But anyway, so it's not, you know, I mean, beautiful place. The property is absolutely gorgeous. But it's really not about the fishing, you know.
It's about the experience.
Yeah, it's about the meals. It's about, you know, and I mean, the rest of the group, like, I get there and everybody's on the deck drinking cocktails and whatever, and I sit down and they're kind of talking about whatever, and somebody asks like, oh yeah, do you fish much or whatever? And I started, yeah, dude, I fish, and I go here, we go there, we do this. And then Craig and I start kind of talking about fishing, and people were like asking questions and stuff. And of course, so we're like, and then one of the dudes was like, man, and I, nobody else said anything. And I'm like, I feel like I just hijacked the conversation. Is there something else you guys would rather talk about than fishing? I thought this was a fish camp, you know? And they're like, well, we were talking about like interior decorating, and one guy was like, well, I was talking about the options that I got on my 2022 $80,000 BMW, you know, that I paid cash for. And we're like, okay, I get what's going on here. I'm a little out of place,
you know? Dude, so. That's all right though. It's good to see that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Know what you're going to head towards.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, if that's your thing, I mean, it was kind of, I would say if you were going to go after pellet heads and want that kind of experience, Boxwood's your first choice. I mean, you know, mm-hmm. that place is legit. Those guides are legit. Yeah. It's pellet heads and it's, you know, somewhat like artificial looking. And you know, it is what it is, but it's fun to fish, and those guys know the property. And, you know, that was, I think from a guide standpoint, I think the Broadmoor is kind of like the easiest guide job on earth.
It sounds like
4 hours in a day, and you don't really have to know much of anything. And the guide was trying to give me lessons on like how to cast and stuff. And I'm like, bro, I got this, man. You're good. Like, he's like, well, let me show you how I do it. And I'm like, okay, let me show you how I do it. I was like, I mean, it's definitely geared towards like, beginners who want to sort of experience fly fishing, that don't have the gear, don't have the stuff, never done it before, and have a lot of money.
So that's the last part, is money. That's probably the reason why they want to make sure they get a good tip. They put them on a few fish and let them have an afternoon nap, and then they're good to go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Damn, I've only heard of the guides taking off like that out east in Idaho. You know, they'll fish from like 7 till 11-ish. And then the guides will drop them back off and say, okay, hey, man, we'll pick you up around 3. But they do fish until like 8:30-ish till dark.
Yeah, I get that. If they want to like give the fish a break in the hottest part of the day or whatever, and then go back out at like 4 and fish till 8 or dark or whatever, that would be fine.
They're just chasing the hatches is what they're doing out there, afternoon hatches. And so that's why they do that, I guess. But I'd never heard of it until I moved here. I was like, I don't work during the middle of the day. What? That's crazy. But, yeah. It was on the Henry's Fork, actually. Yeah. Dude, that's awesome, though. I fished above the Broadmoor, Ontario, but fished that a few times, but never on the Broadmoor.
Yeah. No, I have, too. And it's pretty fun up there. There's some good fish in that section of river.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, we had a great time. Don't get me wrong. The place was awesome. You have your own private cabins, and it's beautiful. So yeah, I mean, anybody gets a chance to go there, I'm certainly not trying to dissuade anybody from going there. I just want to make sure you know exactly what you're getting, what to expect. But
yeah. just be ready to chill the fuck out is what you're saying.
Yeah, go there, relax, recharge. You know, it's just not about the fishing. If you're looking for a place if you're looking for a trip or whatever it is that's about the fishing, you should probably be real clear with that expectation when you book it.
Mm-hmm. That sounds amazing. No, it does. I mean, it'd be a good one for, like you said, if you're trying to schmooze somebody, that'd be a great one.
Yeah, it'd be a great place to take a group of clients or something like that, where you're, you know, kind of all inclusive drinks and meals and cabins and all that stuff. I think there was, I don't know how many they can take at one time, but I think there was, you know, 8 or 10 people in the group that we were there with. So that was all right.
Very nice.
Mm-hmm.
Where else did you go?
Let's see.
We all know that's not the only place.
Yeah. Woo-woo.
What?
Award winner.
Oh shit.
Yeah. What
oh,
else?
Oh shit.
Oh, that. Oh.
Yeah. There's that. Yeah. That was a trip, dude. So, yeah, the rodeo, man, the Eight River Rodeo. That's our jam now. So, this was the third year fishing it. And for anybody who doesn't know, the Eight River Rodeo is a fundraiser. It's a fly fishing tournament that is held, kind of along the, Continental Divide. So the basic format is 2-person teams, and you have 4 rivers to fish day 1 and 4 rivers to fish day 2, and each partner has to post at least 1 fish from all 4 rivers on day 1 to qualify for day 2. And then your team also has to catch, each partner has to catch at least 1 fish on each river for day 2. So, and then all of the teams that cleared all 8 rivers are eligible for prizes and notoriety and such. So, but yeah, it raises money for Project Healing Waters and Trout Unlimited. I think it's the Colorado chapter. I'm probably saying that wrong, but so yeah, anyway, good organizations to support. The tournament format is really cool. I mean, you know, I like the 25 on the fly tournaments are kind of a different format than some other fly fishing tournaments. This one's the same. It's just a real different format. Most tournaments, like, you fish a certain beat for a certain amount of time and whatever, but this year there was quite a bit of river shuffling just because of the weather conditions, water flow conditions. If anybody's been paying attention at all, you know that, you know, these mudslides are shutting down I-70 and blowing out the Colorado and Glenwood Springs or Glenwood Canyon. we got there just before they closed I-70. So we were pretty lucky in that respect. But, you know, the state's namesake, the Colorado River, was definitely living up to its reputation of being red. And it was like BJ's shirt, bright red. And I've seen it brown. I've seen it blown out. I've seen it muddy, but I've never seen it that red. It was crazy. Due to water conditions, well, first of all, the state CPW shut down the Colorado, so we couldn't fish that. And the normal rivers for the rodeo are day 1, the Colorado, Roaring Fork, Frying Pan, and the Crystal. And then day 2, it's the Taylor, the East, Spring Creek, and Gunnison. And so day 1 rivers, they, Colorado was closed. So in, and then in lieu of the Colorado, we had to post fish, 2 fish each on the Frying Pan, one of them from above the bridge below the dam, and one of them had to be in the lower river down, you know, past the private stuff, downstream of that. So that was our one substitute fish. And then there was a restriction on the Roaring Fork due to water temps that we had to fish. We couldn't fish the Roaring Fork below Carbondale. And then the Crystal, due to water temps, we couldn't fish the Crystal below Redstone. So we were way up there. But so, you know, the Frying Pan's the Frying Pan. It is what it is. The Roaring Fork was fun. We, you know, found some new water. And the Crystal, we It was blown out. It was white, gray, chalky, milky looking water. It was super blown out. I mean, we pulled up to the river and we're like, oh man, is this even going to happen? You know? And so they typically have a backup river, where if you fail to clear one of the rivers on day one, generally the Slate River is the makeup river, and it's kind of an equalizer just because the Slate has small fish on it. So, you're not going to, you know, if you have to use the makeup river, you're not going to post a 20 inch makeup fish, you know, on the Slate. So, but due to water temps this year, the Slate was nixed as well. And so day two, they nixed the East River, and then they nixed the Slate as the backup river. So for the East River, the alternate was to post a second fish on the Taylor, but it had to be below the I don't even know what's the section below the dam called on the Taylor. I forget, like the hog trough or the something like that. But so you could only post one fish from that section of the Taylor, and then the makeup fish for the East was to be posted from the lower Taylor. Well, then they also said that since the Slate was out as the makeup river, that the makeup river was also the lower Taylor. So, and then God the damn. Gunnison, because of water temps, they said we could not fish the Gunnison below the town of Gunnison after noon. So if we were going to fish below the town of Gunnison, we'd have to do it in the morning, which is, you know, that's a haul to get down there to fish that, you know, if you fish like start at the Taylor or you could start at the Gunnison. I mean, there's no particular order that you have to fish any given rivers. You just have to catch fish on all four of them. So anyway, there was, you know, Dan and I were talking about it, like, you know, what is the strategy here? Do we just skip the Crystal and just post six fish from the Taylor? I mean, that seems like the smarter play, because even the lower Taylor, like, you got a good shot at a 20 incher or multiples. And the way it turned out, had we done that, we definitely would have had more inches, because the largest fish that we caught on the lower Taylor were definitely bigger. The largest four fish that, or two fish that each of us caught on the lower Taylor were definitely bigger than our Crystal fish. So that probably would have added another 5 or 6 inches to our total. But we talked about it and we're like, you know what? I don't want to do it that way. Like, we're going to clear all four rivers or we're out. Like, I'd rather lose than use the makeup river, you know? So we made that decision, and so we were just driving along the Crystal, pulling over, looking at spots. No, that doesn't look good. That doesn't look good. Okay, we'll keep moving. And Dan was like, I think I know a spot. I think it's further up. We pull over. He's like, no, I think it's further up. And so we pull off, and he's like, yeah, I think this is the spot. And we get out, and dude, I'm just like, I'm a sucker for a good shelf. You know, I love when there's water coming in off of a shelf that makes a seam that goes down the middle of the river. That's one of my favorite, my favorite spots to fish. So when I looked over, I looked downstream, I looked upstream, I saw a shelf at the bottom end of the run. I saw a shelf at the top end of the run. I'm like, yeah, I think we can do something here. So we get down there and kind of walk down below the car, start fishing, and there's like boulder fields. It all looks really good. It's just super, super off color. And so I'm like, you know what? Fuck it. That spot right up there, right where that shelf is feeding into this boulder, there's got to be a fish. There's got to be fish upstream of that boulder and downstream of that boulder. So I just walked all the way up there. I threw a big roll cast up on top of the shelf, let it feed off, mended my line over the boulder, and pulled the slack out, and boom, rainbow in the net. And I'm like, fuck yeah, fish in the net. So then Dan gets down there, and he's like, okay, cool. Where was it? And I point up there. He walks right up there, freaking fish on, boom, cleared the Crystal in like 5 minutes of
nice.
Like walking down nice. To the river. So, and that was the one that clearly should have given us, you know, the most problems. So then it was more, we were talking like, okay, well, shit, dude, we still have like 2+ hours left to fish. What are the odds that we're going to upgrade on the crystal? So, you know, we're like, should we go back to the Roaring Fork? Should we go back, you know, somewhere where we might catch bigger fish or whatever? And, you know, it was like, you know what, we're here. We got a long drive ahead of us. That's going to add another hour to it. So, you know, let's just go. So we did. And, you know, it's a drive to get over to where we camp near the Taylor. And so we get there super late and don't get more than a few hours of sleep. But so then, day two, we got there, we did our Taylor thing. We got our fish. We went to the lower Taylor. We got our fish. We headed to Spring Creek, and that's Spring Creek is my nemesis, man. That place has my number.
And so BJ, stop right there. BJ, Spring Creek is just like all the creeks back east.
Oh, I gotcha.
Only that day, yeah, low hanging. it was running brown. Like, you know, like if you make a nice strong cup of coffee and then pour a little bit of half and half in there and it kind of makes it that, you know, tan color. It was running like that. And so, yeah. And dude, we get to our spot. I throw in first drift, boom, fish. It comes out of the water. It's like 11 inch. Brown. I'm like, oh, sweet. And it comes off just as I'm about to net it. And dude, that place just has my number, man. Cause then it was like nothing. Dan walks down, hangs one. We measure it. He hangs another one. And I'm like, God damn it. I can't get shit. So then we just start walking and I'm like, it's cool, man. It's going to happen. But, you know, inside I'm like, fuck this place. Oh, I hate you, fish. But finally got one like 6 inches and I'm like, I'm out, dude. That's as good as I'm going to get. Let's take off. Let's head to the Gunnison. We got a good shot at, you know, upgrading on that river. So dude, we get down to the Gunnison and we go to this spot and there's dudes there. And so we fish like upstream a ways, start kind of working our way down. And then one of them is coming out and he's kind of, you know, he's got a big walking stick and he's going super slow and he's like kind of shaky. And so we're like, oh, you gonna be all right? And he's like, yeah, but I'm really worried about my partner down here because he almost didn't make it across. And there was like this chute that was coming through that was going, it was like knee deep and it was cranking. And so we're like, all right, well, we'll go check on him. He's like, I think he went the other way to try to find a different way out. And we're like, yeah, he's not going to find anything any better going downstream. That's for sure. So the dude comes up and he's like, yeah, dude, I'm just really nervous about this. And so we just said, all right, well, we'll put your stuff on the other side. And Dan said, hey, I'll just walk with you and I'll help you across. And so he stands downstream of the guy. Well, you know, when you're going across fast water, and if you don't know, pay attention, because when you're walking across fast water, you do not want your one foot to wipe out the other foot, right? Always have one firmly planted foot. So that way, if one foot gives, you can kind of spin around and plant it and you're still good. Well, so you face upstream and you sort of crab walk. You put your right foot out and you step and you plant it. And then you bring your left foot next to your right foot. Keep a little distance there. You don't want to put both your feet right next to each other because then you're not as stable. So you just kind of do this slow crab walk. Keep your feet like shoulder width apart. And that way, if you start to take it, once you commit to taking a step, like if you catch a toe on a boulder or something like that, like you got to have somewhere to put your foot. Well, this guy took one step with his right foot and then he stepped across his right foot with his left foot. And of course, the current sweeps his left foot through his right foot, and he just sat down in the middle of the fucking river. And then he went over backwards, and Dan went down with him, and the dude like sat in Dan's lap and started going over backwards. And I'm like, oh, hell no, I'm not letting him go over backwards. So I go running up there and just like throw my shoulder into Dan's back to keep him from going over backwards. And then we're like, okay, let's back out of the river. And, you know, we kind of talked about, here's how you want to work your feet and whatever. And then after that, Dan went upstream of the guy. I was downstream of the guy, and I just had two hands on him, pushing him, and just took steps with him while Dan was upstream of him. And he was like holding Dan's arm, and we got him across there, and he was all good after that. But man, it's like, I don't know what he would have done by himself. Like, the way he reacted, though, was just as soon as he started to have any trouble, he just literally sat down in the river and filled up his waders. It was like, dude, I mean, he was wearing like wading pants and they were pretty tight. So he didn't like super fill up waders or anything, but he was soaked. But so anyway, we fished there for a while and we caught our fish. We cleared the rivers. So we kind of celebrated that we had all eight rivers in the bag. And then we're like, well, we worked that area for a while and then weren't getting anything. So we're like, all right, dude, let's. And then Dan goes, I know a spot. And he just said it just like that. He's like, I know a spot. I'm like, all right, fuck it. Let's go. And so we get up there and he goes, well, all right, so we're going to have to cross the river. And it's like waist deep and it's the Gunnison and it's moving pretty good. And if we do that, we're coming back across in the dark. So as long as you're cool with that. And I'm like, fuck, I got headlamps. Let's do this, man. And so we crossed the river and went upstream and the sun went down and we started hanging fish. And dude, I got to say, like, I don't know what my problem is, but I lose more fish than the average person. I don't get why. I still haven't been able to figure it out. I thought it was just, you know, little flies, big fish kind of thing. But dude, I was fishing like size 12. And I'd have it eat, come tight to the fish, good head shakes, gone. I did that like five fish in a row. I lost them. I could not tell you why. And so I was getting kind of frustrated. And then I hooked up with one and upgraded. And then Dan upgraded. And, you know, we finished out the evening and we both upgraded. I think in that spot, we each added probably 3 inches to our total. And as it turned out, we won the tournament by a little over 3 inches. So
nice.
The decision to cross that river at the end of the tournament, in the last 9 minutes of the tournament, we won it. Wow. Because when like 10 minutes before the end of the tournament, we didn't have enough to win it. We would have been in fourth place. And in the last 10 minutes of the tournament, we upgraded to first. So, and nice. It's kind of funny because we're talking about like a group of us were talking and we were like, you know, talking about how all these guys are skilled anglers and whatever. But I was asking like, okay, here's how Dan and I fish. Like we're literally standing in the river, looking at our phones. Okay. We got 2 minutes. Okay. We got 1 minute. Okay, it's time to fish. And we start fishing and we start catching fish. We probably have, you know, our measured fish in the tournament each year within the first like 5 minutes. We've both cleared the first river. I mean, that's just how we do it. And then at the end of each day, we are literally like time check. Okay, we got 2 minutes left and we're just like grinding. And I mean, we even stay and fish like after we're done, like, okay, we can't count anything after this, but we just keep fishing. And so I was asking like these dudes were all standing there hanging around and I'm like, who else does that? Do you guys do that? And all of them were like, bro, like, you know, we stay in a hotel room and we get out to the river like 8 o'clock and, you know, we'll go change out of our waders and go get lunch. And then we go get a nice dinner and then we might fish after dinner and what. And I'm like, okay, that's the difference, man. It's like, you know, when people talk, Kurt and Steve were talking about fishing at Maldonado and they're like, oh man, we aren't going to outfish you guys. And I go, no, dude, you guys can definitely outfish us. I said, I doubt you'll outgrind us, but you can outfish us. But I think, you know, that's the difference is that grind of just, you got 2 minutes left, better start fishing harder, you know, versus, oh, it's getting dark. Why don't we call it, you know, that kind of mentality. And the difference between first and third was like 6 inches. And the difference between third and fourth was a quarter of an inch.
Jeez. Wow. Yeah,
so that's how close it was this year. And, you know, everybody was working under the same restrictions. But, you know, we asked the question about, you know, having the Makeup River be the tailor. If there's a potential for the Makeup River to perform better than one of the day one rivers, there should be some kind of penalty for having to use the Makeup River. Like if you don't clear all four rivers, you should get like a 6-inch penalty or something like that. You can still get, you know, just so, yeah, you can still use the Makeup River, but you've got to catch a really good fish on it in order for it to like win the tournament for you. But that's not the rules. And, you know, I'm not, it's not my tournament and we've all fished by the same rules, but one of the top three teams didn't even fish the Crystal. They drove past it and said, we'll just post 6 fish on the Taylor. And that's what they did. So it's all strategy, man.
Mm-hmm. Bold strategy, Cotton.
That's right. That's right. But, yeah. You know, we had a blast as we always do, sleeping in the car. So last thing I'll say about that. So there's this booby prize called the monkey on your back. So I don't know the exact details of the story, but evidently a few tournaments back, one of the guys found this like stuffed gorilla doll, like, you know, it's like a foot tall little stuffed gorilla. And I don't know the story of how it came to be, but they brought it to the award ceremony and something happened with the gorilla or with somebody had like had car trouble or, you know, whatever. And they said, oh, you got the monkey on your back. And they gave it to him and said, okay, bring it back next year. And we'll, so it became this like every year kind of booby prize thing. And last year, the dude who won the monkey on his back, they were like bushwhacking to get back to one of the rivers and he sliced his leg open on barbed wire. Ended up in the ER getting stitches, and then he finished the tournament. Damn. And they still cleared all 8 rivers. So that's grinding for you right there. But so this year, my partner Dan got the monkey on his back booby prize.
What happened?
So day one, we go over on Thursday, and then Thursday night is the kickoff ceremony and, you know, a little barbecue and where it was, I think, appetizers at the Colorado Hotel Colorado, I think it's called. And they give you the measuring devices, you get your shirts, you get all that kind of stuff. And they make sure everybody knows, you know, the situation with the rivers and what the rules are. And then you can hang out and have drinks and socialize and whatever. So, and then we go up and camp at our first spot. So our first spot where the place where we camp is like, I don't know, it's like a half hour outside of Glenwood. So we get up there and I sleep in the back of the Armada and Dan sleeps out on the ground in a bivy sack on an air mattress. And so I normally lay my air mattress out flat in the back of the Armada and we load everything in on top of it. And then when we get there, we just throw everything in the front seats and I pump up the air mattress and away we go. Well, I forgot to do that this time. So the air mattress was like folded up. So I'm like, shit, dude, we got to pull everything out so I can lay the freaking air mattress out. So we do that. And while we're like pulling everything out of the car, Dan goes, I think I'm missing something. And I'm like, what's that? And he's like, I don't see my sleeping bag. I'm like, where's your bivy sack? And he's like, it's attached to my sleeping bag. I'm like, you don't have anything to sleep in? Like, you got nothing? He's like, nope. I go, well, shit, man. I got a couple of tarps in here. Like, and he's like, fuck. Well, let's go. I said, Walmart's like, we looked on his phone or whatever. Walmart in Glenwood Springs is open till 10. It was like 9 o'clock. I'm like, okay, fuck it. Let's load everything back into the truck and drive back to Glenwood Springs. And, so we get in Glenwood Springs, go into Walmart. He buys a sleeping bag and an air mattress and he's fixing to use the tarps that I've got, you know, sleep under the tarps. And so I'm like, all right, cool, we're good. So we drive all the way back up there and I'm pulling everything out of the car again. And we go to load the or he plugs in the air pump. I've got a little 12 volt air pump for pumping up the air mattress, and he hits the power button and it goes, rah! And I'm like, that's weird. It's never made that noise before. Thing was fucking smoke, dude. So we didn't have a fucking pump to pump up his air mattress or my air mattress. So he slept on the ground on two tarps in his new Walmart sleeping bag. And I slept in the back of the Armada on the hard floor. Fucking miserable.
Just wrecked your back.
Oh, dude, we were so jacked the next morning. We're like, fuck, we're getting too old for this shit. So the next morning, we drive back into Glenwood Springs. We didn't even go fish yet. We're just like, fuck it, dude. We got to go back to Walmart and get a fucking air pump because I ain't doing this again tonight. So, dude, we go back to Walmart. I bought a pillow and a pillowcase because I forgot my pillow. I bought two 12-volt air pumps and a hand pump because I'm like, fuck that shit. I'm not taking any more chances after last night. Through that.
There you go.
And then we went fishing and still managed to clear all four rivers that day. But so, and then day two, Dan was fishing just downstream of the bridge up on the Taylor, and he broke his rod and said he had never broken a rod in the rodeo. So that was a first. So anyway, the combination of forgetting his bivy sack and his sleeping bag and breaking his rod, he ended up earning the monkey on his back. So he's got that stuffed monkey and has to bring it back and hopefully give it to somebody else next year. But
God damn, what a disaster.
Oh, dude, that was
that would have sucked.
Like, dude, maybe we should just go find a fucking hotel room, dude. I'll take a fucking Motel 6 right now. I don't even care, man. Whatever. I'll take a hotel with an M right now.
But it's a hotel, dude, motel.
That's awesome.
Oh, dude, it was brutal, but we got through it. And man, I'll tell you, the next night, laying on that air mattress with my new pillow, dude, I was like, this is like the fucking Four Seasons up in this motherfucker in the back of the Armada.
Hell yeah. There's no dew on you. That's awesome.
Oh, it was so that's nice.
Awesome. That's awesome.
So nice. But yeah, dude, so we had a blast and we were totally shocked, dude, because, you know, we ended up with 222 inches. And I think the year before we had like 257, I think we won it the year before with 257. And the year before that we had around 250 and it was only good enough for second place. So, you know, at 222, I'm like, well, maybe we're top three, but probably not. I figured we were fifth, sixth, whatever. So then when they start calling out the teams and doing all the stuff and Clint Cruikshank, who, man, he puts on a really good tournament. That dude works his ass off for the rodeo. But he starts calling out the results and he's like, so before that, he called us over there and was like, hey, I need to see your guys' pictures because this shit's super close. And we're like, really? So he starts looking at our measurements that we turned in. Cause you just send him a text that says like Crystal Scott, you know, 28 millimeters, Dan, 29 millimeters or centimeters or whatever. And so you just send a text that has the rivers and then what each guy posted on each river. And then, you know, you also take pictures of the fish in the measuring device, but you only go to the pictures if it's like close and he wants to verify our measurements. So he's going through the pictures and he's verifying all of our measurements. And we get down to like the last three or four and Dan's kind of scrolling through his phone and he's like, oh shit, I can't find that one. He's like, I think it's not that one. Let me see. And then Clint was like, he goes, oh man, you guys are far ahead that I'm not worried about it. And we go and sit back down at the table and I'm like, does he mean we're like far enough ahead of everybody or far enough ahead of the team that we were close with? And then we're like, right. Oh, I'm not sure what he meant by that, but okay, that sounds good. At least we're in the running for something. So then when he reads out, he's like, okay, so in third place, you know, with 216 inches, and we're like, oh shit, like we're probably in second place with 222 if third place is at 216.
Right.
And then he's like, and then second place with 218 point whatever. And we're like, holy shit, dude, 222 fucking won it. No way.
Wow. So, that's awesome. I mean,
that just tells you how tough the fishing was this year, man. It was no joke, man.
That's awesome.
Yeah. That's awesome. But we had a time. Tournament. It is. And I totally, I totally recommend anybody who wants to jump in there, man. It's a grind, but it's whatever you want to make it. You know, if you're not wanting to be on the river from the entire time, from the moment you can fish to the moment you can't fish, like, you don't have to do it that way. Like, you do you, you know, but that's just how we fish. And, yeah, next year we're expecting to see a few new female teams because Erin Kreider was fishing with her partner and I was chatting with her and she's been posting some stuff up on Instagram going, come on, ladies, who wants to sign up for this next year? This is a kick in the pants and whatever. So she's got, she knows she's got a lot of contacts out there in the fly fishing industry, especially with the other ladies. So we're expecting to see a few more female teams. So, you know, but yeah, anybody who has a chance to fish that tournament, I would highly recommend it. And again, it's not, you know, it's just basically bragging rights and a bottle of bourbon, and a blue ribbon with a gold medal if you win it, but you're raising a lot of money for some really good charities. So it's well worth it. And it's just a freaking blast, man. And when are you going to challenge yourself like that too? I mean, really, like, you're not going to go, oh, hey, let's go fish three different rivers today. You know, you're going to go bang a couple spots on a river and go home. So it's a lot different than how you normally fish. And just like with other, you know, like with the Mile High 25 and tournaments like that, the drive time, the locations, like where you're going, you know, it's one thing to go, okay, we're going to go fish, you know, pick a river. We're going to go fish the Roaring Fork today. Yeah, you might catch 10, 12, 15, 20 fish, but can you go to the Roaring Fork and hang a fish each in, you know, a couple hours? Maybe, maybe not. So it just changes the way you approach the river. And it's just a blast, dude. I mean, it's such a cool format and it's a great group of people. And they do a barbecue after the tournament for the award ceremony. It's at the, what's that place called? The Three Rivers. Almont. I think it's called Three Rivers Resort in Almont. So mm-hmm. they provide some barbecue and drinks and stuff. And then Ore Distillery, they provide, bottles of bourbon and other things, both for the raffle as well as for the top three teams. You get your bottle of booze. So, but it's a good time, man.
It's pretty fun. I remember when I first started fishing, it was the second year, they didn't have the cut in half PVC pipe. So they gave you a piece of Tyvek with measured out up to like 26 inches. So you had to lay the Tyvek down on the side of the
stream. Oh, geez. And
put the fish on the Tyvek. Yeah, it was a pain in the ass. Yeah. The last year I fished in it was the first year of the little things that they have, the measuring device that they have now. Yeah, that was the last year I fished in it.
Yeah, those are pretty slick. It's just mm-hmm. like PVC pipe that's cut in half with a tape measure like glued to the back side of it, so you can just lay the fish in there and line up its tail. But we did have an issue with ours because the end part of it where the fish's nose pushes up against, it was cracked. So the rope that we had tied on it to carry it would get hung in the crack and it would make the fish move like a half a centimeter further into the board. So it was like, wait a minute, it says 32 centimeters and we're like 32 and a half centimeters. And I'm like, oh crap, the rope stuck in it. And I push it flush and it's like 33 centimeters. I'm like, shit, dude, we're giving away centimeters here.
That's
funny.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
So next year we'll be checking our little measuring device a little bit better, I think.
Yeah. They're probably as old as the first ones that they made, because they used to have pink ones for the girls' teams and the white ones for the guys' team. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's sexist.
Yeah. Sexist. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, bring it on, ladies.
Good job, yeah. Scotty. Good job, buddy.
Yeah, congratulations, dude. That's awesome.
Thanks, man.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. We're going for the three-peat next year.
Nice. Right. Well, Dan's on the three-peat. Didn't him and Earl win it a couple times, too?
Yeah, so this was his seventh year fishing the tournament, my third year.
Gotcha.
So they had, let's see, they had... Oh, I'm probably going to screw this up, but what did they have? The only thing that they don't have is a third place. So it was like second, first. They had second, first, second. And then Dan and I had second, first, first. So we were talking this year. Second place, first place for each of the tournaments that they fished. So we were talking like, well, we got to get second this year to keep the pattern going. So second, second, first. So, but we broke the pattern and repeated as world champions.
That's awesome.
I'm pretty sure that makes us automatic pro staff with Dick's Sporting Goods.
Yes.
Walmart for sleeping bags.
And Walmart. Yeah. We're definitely Walmart pro staff for sure.
And I think you get big five with that second win also.
Oh, dang.
That got some ammo. That's a good one because you got ammo there.
Yeah, I can't rep Dick's anymore since they stopped selling firearms. Yep. Screw those guys.
Exactly.
I want to be a Sportsman's Warehouse pro staff.
Yeah.
Heck yeah.
Well, is there any topics that we're gonna go over or
nope, we're done. See you, good night.
Yeah. Well, so I did fish another time since the last recording. And so I'll mention that real quick. There's not a lot of details to go into it because I ain't gonna spot burn, but there is one thing I wanted to mention. So Brian Onikione, who just for the record, I'm too old to fish with him anymore because he tried to kill me. But we hiked into a mountain lake. It was, 5 miles or so one way, a little less than 5 miles and like over a couple thousand feet of elevation to get up to this pair of lakes. And so Kurt Blois went with us. And so it was me, Kurt, and Brian, and I had Cooper with me, all good. And so we hiked up in there, and it was absolutely gorgeous like it is up there. And the hike just about killed me. And my Sims Vapors that I've used for my hiking boots, basically, anytime I go wet wade kind of fishing, I always use those Vapors. Those things have been awesome. I put a lot of miles on them, but for some reason, they decided, my heels decided that was the day that I was going to get like the worst blisters I've ever had. So that totally sucked. But it was a great day. The fishing was okay. We saw some fish, but there was, so these are greenback cutthroat, right? And there was like a family up there that was throwing spinners under a bobber plastic like float. And they side hooked one of these cutties and brought it up on shore, and it was flopping around in the grass, and they're picking it up, taking turns, getting their picture taken with it, and then dropping it back on the grass, and it flopped around in the rocks. And I was about to say something, and then the dude busts out a rock and just bonks this thing on the head, killed it. And then he's like showing his 11, 12 year old son how to clean this fish. He's gutting it and whatever. And I was like, I think these are supposed to be catch and release only, but like, whatever. I don't know that for sure. So I didn't say anything. So I mentioned it to Brian, and he's like, yeah, these are protected fish. Like, you are not allowed to kill these fish anywhere in the state. Plus, this is a catch and release lake. So,
state fish.
It is.
It's a state fish, yeah.
But it's protected. So, know the regulations. If you're a harvest fisherman, great. If it's within the rules, do your thing. But definitely know the regulations. And had I known, I would have said something to him, but it was too late for that fish anyway. So, So there was a dead greenback, but the thing I wanted to mention that was more than anything else was when I got back down there, when we got back down to the parking lot, I noticed there was just like a pile of bagged dog shit, like bags of fucking dog shit in a pile next to the fucking outhouses. Like, you know how they have the actual like full on framed in doored outhouses at the National Forest campgrounds and stuff like that. They had one of those and it had like the windbreak and whatever. And you walk in there to go to the door and there was literally a pile of probably 7 or 8 bags of fucking dog shit. So,
jeez.
Yeah, I just want to throw it out there. If you are a dog owner that takes your dog out in the woods, and God, I was wondering what you were doing there, Rob. It sounded like something inappropriate. But
I was just filling up my water bottle. Sorry.
Yeah.
Is that what it's called nowadays?
I just heard this.
Chuck off the camera.
In the background, I'm like, what the heck is he doing off camera?
He's making Mac.
Oh, bags of dog shit. Yeah, oh.
He's stirring the mac and cheese up real quick.
Yeah, right. Something. Holy shit.
Having tug of war with Cyclops.
Macaroni in a pot.
It's the cheesiest. Rick's awesome. Cheese and macaroni. So
it's Alfredo cheese and macaroni.
If you bag your dog's shit and then leave it, like, just don't go in the fucking woods, okay? Like, you don't belong there. You don't deserve to be there. I mean, you're better off if you're going to bag it and not take it with you. You're better off to not bag it at all. Like, next time it rains, we'll kind of take care of that. But, dude, I don't get this. And I will say that I'm not going to say where we were, but the trails, like, all the way up, all the way down, were super, super clean. Like, there wasn't garbage. There was nothing. There was one bag of dog shit in the 4.5 or 5 miles that we hiked, but everything else was like, it was super, super clean. So I will say that, but I just totally don't get the pile up your bags of dog shit at the fucking outhouse crowd. Like, what's that all about? Maybe somebody can explain that to me.
Yeah, I don't know. It's if you bring your dog, it's your responsibility.
Yeah, take it with you.
That's what I say.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and if for whatever reason, if you're not going to take it with you, like, just make sure it's like super far off the trail and it's like where nobody's going to step in it or get into it or whatever. But like, I mean, if your dog goes off the trail and takes a dump in the bushes or whatever, like, okay, whatever. Like, but if you bag it, fucking take it with you. Like, God damn.
Well,
it's not that hard.
Speaking of dogs, let's talk about that for a second. So I haven't had this much experience with dogs until I've moved here, because I'm in a boat a lot of times. And I mean, people that have their dogs under control, you know, when you're wade fishing is one thing. But man, just because you're in a boat and you have your dog, you still need to keep control of that thing, man. I mean, the dog is on top of you at that point. So if you bring your dog and it's not your boat, then you need to make sure you keep your dog up under control. I mean, because the dog's most.
Well, first of all, if you're going in somebody else's boat, you better have their permission to bring your dog.
Yes.
If you show up with your dog and they weren't expecting it, like, I'd be like, nope, sorry, you ain't going.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, you know your buddies and they know your dog. That's one thing. But if you don't know, you better ask. Or don't bring
it. Even if you have your own boat and you bring your dog, it's still my gear. And, you know, I'm not complaining about anybody's dog, but I just have seen it quite a few times where the dog's just back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And you're going down, you know, some rougher water and the damn dog's all over on the side of the boat because we're in rafts. And so they just stand up on the side, or if you're rowing, they're you know, getting in your, in between when you're trying to row, and it's a whole different game than just having a dog on the side of the bank, you know? But just remember, it's your dog. You got to take responsibility for your dog. And so 100%. That means if you're going in some rougher water, don't just throw your dog in the boat and go, oh, well, he can swim. That fucker still needs a life jacket. You know, I mean, just because he's a dog and can swim, man, he needs to, you know, take just as big of precautions as you do if you're in some rougher water. So, yeah. But anyway, that's my dog thing.
Cinch up his wading belt.
Exactly. And make sure you get a life jacket that has a handle on that damn thing.
Yes.
Man. I mean, dog falls in, get that, spend the money on the life jacket for the dog. And just the same as you would if you were buying a life jacket for yourself, you know, make it where it's easily able to get a hold of them, you know, because even if you throw a, you know, a bag of rope at a dog ain't going to grab it where you can. So at least you need to have a good life jacket that's got some way you can grab him and get his ass back in the boat, you know? And so, but 100%. That's my kind of new stuff with the dog aspect of it. I mean, I'm used to seeing dogs on the bank and, you know, most of the guys, 95% of them have control of their dogs and it's great, but you know, that 5% sucks, man. They're running through your runs and you're just like, dude, what are you doing, bro? You know, get your dog.
Yeah, exactly.
Just takes off. And I don't.
Well, and one of the issues is that, like, so many people think that, like, their dogs are fucking perfect and that, oh yeah, did you see what my dog did? He just ran over there and jumped on that dude. It was so cute. And it's like, no, everybody wants to kill your fucking dog. Like, mm-hmm. Your dog's being a total asshole. It's not being cute, you know? And so, like, you should not allow your dog to go running up, barking at other people and jumping on other people or running over to where they are. And, you know, sometimes it happens and you just got to like, okay, sorry about that. Like, I got him. Like, you stay the fuck over here. Like, it happens, you know, they're dogs. Like, but if you're just like thinking it's funny and like making jokes about it and nobody, like, you think everybody else thinks that your dog's as cute as you think it is. And it ain't like, it's like people's kids, you know, like,
And don't be that guy. Don't be that guy. If your dog is acting up and just, you know, gets pissed off and starts kicking the shit out of it and then just throws it in the car and you go out and continue to fish, man. I mean, it's hot outside, you know, don't leave your dog in the car while you go fish, man. And I mean, I've seen that too. And I mean, I get, you know, some guys have little camper shells on the back of their truck and they just, it's cool. He can run around in there. Well, man, it's still hot as shit inside that damn camper.
145 degrees in there.
Yeah. So, I mean, don't be that dude. If you're going to bring,
he's going to eat your melted chocolate and shit all over your back seat.
Exactly. Yeah. Just don't be that guy, man. If your dog's done or he can't control him, then it's time for you to pack your shit up and head on back to the house, you know? And so that's the way I look at it. But, you know, it's a different aspect out here a little bit more, I think. But, you know, what do you do? And I've seen a lot more people bring their dog. I think it's more of an Instagram social media thing. Oh,
it is.
My dog was out fishing. And I'm just like, man, your dog ain't fishing, dude. It's just running around, you know? And so,
dude, so I think the next thing, I think what I'm going to start doing is somebody's dog's being an asshole. So I'm going to be like, hey, dude, does your dog have an Instagram? I totally want to follow your dog. And then I'm going to follow their dog. And then I'm just going to talk mad shit on their fucking dog's Instagram page. About how much of a piece of shit their owner is.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
I think 90% of those dogs have their own Instagram pages.
Yeah. Did we lose Steve?
Yep.
Oh man, I hope he... Are you recording, Scott?
Yep.
Oh, okay, good. Okay. I didn't know if we lost Steve in this recording. Yeah. Oh, well.
Nope.
Yeah,
he had to bounce.
Do you know who has a banging Instagram page?
I do. Tell us.
5280 Angler.
You got that right.
Yeah. So since we're so deep in it, this podcast right here is brought to you by 5280 Angler. So if you are searching for expert guides and fly fishing fun on the front range, be sure to check out 5280 Angler. Whether you are looking to sharpen your skills on the South Platte system, plan the perfect date, or host the ultimate party on the water, 5280 Angler has your trip covered. The guides at 5280 have the passion, the skill, and the experience to serve you. Find web specials at 5280angler.com and check out recent trip picks on Facebook and the IG at 5280angler. 5280angler is passionate about service and wild about them fishes.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, they are.
Hashtag dogs of Instagram.
My dog has her own Instagram, but it's she stays on.
Oh my god, dude, that is! I saw that thing pop up on my like recommendations, and I was like, "You got to be kidding me!" Griggs actually has a fucking Instagram for his goddamn dog. He's one of those guys. I was like, "Nope, dude,
I don't think
ain't no way in hell I'm following that."
Come on, Emma loves you.
Oh dang, dude. Yeah. Emma can love me all she wants. I ain't following a dog's Instagram. Dumb.
I don't think there's been anything. Has there been any posts on there lately? I haven't even seen it.
You're asking the wrong dude, man.
I don't know. Instagram
either. Yeah. Well, I'll tell her that you guys hurt her feelings. Well, we have a barn. We got a barn cat now, and so Emma's feeling lonely because everybody's giving the barn cat love, and so
your barn cat.
The barn
your
cat,
barn got cat needs an Instagram.
Yeah, I was gonna say, has the barn cat got an Instagram yet?
Like, no.
Hashtag pussy of Instagram of the Griggs estate.
Yeah,
exactly. I should put him on there. I should start one just to make Emma and the cat.
Hashtag Idaho pussy.
Oh dang!
Yeah, you just missed the dog talk, Steve.
Yeah, I had had a world falling apart over here from mid-school problems. So,
Dang. Well, you resolved that swiftly.
I don't think it's resolved. I think we barely got to the tip of the iceberg.
Oh, geez.
Yeah. Let me say this. I hate mid-school. I hate mid-school and high school kids more than I hate dogs.
Yes.
I'm with you on
that. Yeah, they're total assholes from about 13 to about 16 total assholes. God. 90% of them.
Good Lord. Hey.
Yeah, I don't know. We've been pretty fortunate. Our kids have got some pretty good friends and pretty good group of kids around them. So we've been pretty fortunate, but I've seen the downside too.
Oh yeah.
That sucks.
Yep.
Well,
somebody needs to take those motherfuckers fly fishing. That's all I can say.
Yeah.
I think ass whipping first, then fly fishing.
Dude, that's awesome. Well, I do have one quick topic, and I can't believe I'm even going to bring this topic up because was kind of...
But you will.
Yeah. So Scott has been to my place before, and on the backside of the property, we back right up to the river. And on the front side of the property, we have a pond. And in the state of Idaho, you can fish a navigable water as long as you stay below the flood line. No problem. I got zero problem with that. I think
high water mark, right?
High water mark. Yep. I think it's great. But on
that's where it should be everywhere.
I think you're right. I totally agree with that. On the front of the property, we have that pond. And I am running into more people coming onto our property and fishing it when we are not here, the gate being closed.
Is it kids?
Or no, I came.
Really?
So we were building the house and I came home, I guess it was about a week and a half ago, and I saw a guy standing on our dock fishing. And I was just like, oh, he must be one of the workers or whatever. And so I go over and I was like, hey, how's it going, man? He's like, good. I was like, you catching anything? And I thought he was a worker. And he says, oh, man, no, I'm not really catching anything. I was like, oh, man, they're in there. I said, who are you with over here? And he's like, oh, I just saw. I was just walking down the road and just came over and started fishing. And I was like, hey, man, well, I'm the owner. And so anyway, I kind of was like irritated a little bit about it, and I let him fish. And so I was like, yeah, man, I'm Rob. I live here, blah, blah, blah. We're building this house, blah, blah, blah. He was like, oh, man, I appreciate it. Well, I said, if you want to fish, just let me know. And I said, as long as the gate's open, I'm usually here or my wife. And he was like, oh, okay. And so I was being nice. And so 2 days ago, all the construction guys left, and it's about 6 o'clock, and my daughter text messaged me and says, hey, there's about four or five people fishing the pond. And I was like, what? And I was at my kid's school. So I come back over and this guy had brought his brother and his brother's two kids over. And I was like, hey, man, what's going on? And he says, well, he said that you said I could come over and fish. And I was like, I did say that. And he says, well, I saw the gate was open. So we just came on in and started fishing, hoping that's okay. At that point, I was getting a little pissed. So what I'm saying is, dude, we are now having to shut our gate when we are here. As soon as the construction guys leave at 4:30, we're having to shut the gate because these guys are coming in. And I'm getting irritated at it. And so
just say no.
I know, exactly. I just try to be nice, you know, be neighborly. They live up the street towards the west. And so all that to say is, look, if there's a fence around the place and you've met the owner, at least get the guy's phone number and call and ask, hey, man, I'm wanting to go fishing. Is it okay if I come over fish
your pond? Can I bring the whole family?
Pay more. Dude, that's exactly what happened. And I mean, I don't know. What do you guys think?
I think no trespassing signs and 12 gauge salt load. That's what I think. Problem fucking solved. You put some fucking
throw a few empty shells around that you can see from the entrance.
You put some rock salt. You put some rock salt in that dude's kid's ass. He ain't coming back.
Well,
he's coming back with an AR.
Yeah, that's probably true. And I've always been like, man, if I ever own property, dude, I'm gonna let everybody fish and this and that. But now that I actually have a little pond, and Scott, you fish it. I mean, it's not that great of a pond. I mean, it's got some fish in it, right. But it ain't like we're going to fish somewhere crazy. It's a pond, and I just am a little bit irritated with it. And so I never thought I'd be like,
God, just say no.
Yeah. I'm just irritated. Yeah, I think that's what I'm going to have to just start doing.
Remind me to give you a comment offline about all this.
Okay.
That I'm not going to say on the podcast.
Okay. Yeah.
Because shooting someone's child with rock salt isn't bad enough.
Yeah. No, it doesn't have anything to do with that. It has to do with a journey I'm helping Rob along.
Oh, dang.
Yeah.
I mean,
his anger management journey.
No, it ain't that. I'm helping him.
You should tell the dude, hey, listen, you can fish all you want as long as you follow me and like everything I post on Facebook.
Yeah, there you go.
Which I don't post anything anymore. So yeah. Well, I just irritated.
You should tell him, hey, you know what? You should tell him.
What?
If he buys an ultimate rod case, he can fish your pond.
Yes.
Damn right.
Heck yeah.
He is a spin fisherman. Yeah.
That's you can tell him that we'll get him $20 off.
Yep.
$20 off.
So I almost said 20%, but we'll get him $20 off.
Well, I just never thought I'd be in that boat of like telling people, nah, dude, you can't fish. But I think I'm more irritated that that they just don't ask, and that's right. Where my problem's lying but at, that- I think.
That's what people do. We deal with the same thing out here. So we deal with it out here. Like, you know, so Pennsylvania, if you own both sides of a stream here, you can make it private, right? So there is no high water mark out here. If you own both sides, you can fence that sucker up and ain't nobody allowed.
What if you own one side?
Nope. Don't matter. You got to own both. You have to own
both. I mean, here, if you own one side, you own all the way out to the middle of the river, basically. Including the riverbed. So people can't anchor, they can't walk in the water on your side, all that.
That is not the case here. You cannot. So like I fish one of the streams I fish, somebody owns one side. It is fishing from the stream only, but you can't, you know, walk up on the bank is the rule done that. But so our state has done a very good job of gaining access for fishermen, right? And what happens, right? They open up a new section of stream and these MFers go in and start trashing it. And, you know, it'll last a couple years. And then the landowner's like, all right, I'm done. Right. And they'll, you know,
lock it up.
They'll lock it back up, man. And it's just,
yeah.
you try and be nice and just people are people, man.
Do you feel like it's mostly fly fishermen that are doing that or spin fishermen?
Oh, no, it's because it's no, it ain't even spin. It's bait fishermen.
Bait fishermen.
I would go on.
Hey, careful.
90% of the time, it is a bait fisherman who only fishes 2 months of the year and then, you know, fills up a stringer and then throws it in the freezer. And then come August, he throws all that shit in the trash because it got bad because he never ate it. And then he's on the shoot. Then he's on the hunting season where he shoots an animal, throws it in the freezer, never eats it, and throws that out in spring before he has to put fish in it. And then it's you know, cycle goes from there, right?
Yep. That's it. I don't know. Maybe it's that point too that they were all had spin fishing rods and I was just like, man, if they were fly fishing. Maybe
you
I would
motherfuckers.
Be a I know exactly.
You heathens.
Trouble mm-hmm. with everything else, and I just was like, damn, man, you know. But
well, the other thing to consider too is if they're fishing with that kind of gear and they're, you know, ripping those barbed fucking treble hooks out of those fish and jacking their fucking jaws up, like that's not a very big body of water. It's not like you got a million fish in there, so they're gonna start fucking them up. And yeah, that's bullshit. I would definitely say something about that. I would say, hey, you know what? I've never mind. I changed my mind. You can't fish here. And furthermore, you should educate yourself on, you know, catch and release fishing and how to minimize your impact on the fish. Well, you can explain that to me, then I'll maybe let you fish here again.
What do you do if you come home a day and they're just chucking fish up on the bank?
Dude, I just called the cops. Hey, these guys.
Then you start busting caps. Yeah. Then fuck the rock salt. That he's spitting lead.
I got no trespassing signs on the front. We don't have anything on the back, just because, you know, I mean, people can fish back there, you know. I'm okay with that. It's just, man, they come through the gate, they drive through the gate, and it's not, Scott knows, it's not like it's a big mansion. It's just a bar gate, and if it's open, you said if the gate was open, I was like, you son of a bitch, man. I said, you, not your whole entire damn brother and his kids and everybody else, you know. I just was like, wow, you're taking full advantage of this. And so,
but that's
it was just irritating.
Dude, that's the perfect illustration of why you don't share spot information with certain people. Because, you know, you take one guy or you tell one guy and you're like, yeah, it's a pretty special spot and whatever. And next thing you know, that dude's there with four more fucking people showing all his buddies. Hey, man, I got this really cool spot. Y'all should come check it out. Let's go. And then you're like, what the fuck, bro? Like, you know, that's and then it's done. You know, it's not even. And I realize that it's public water and, you know, you don't own it, but whatever. But that's the same thing. Like, you got to be careful who you tell for some of those, you know, lesser known, more special spots.
Right.
That's what happens. You're going to come back with the whole fam damnly.
I just don't get it. And
stringers.
And the stringers.
But, I mean, I guess what I would say is, like, if they showed up and they had a rig, like, with a roof rack and maybe a couple of Ultimate Rod cases on the roof rack, I might make an exception. Mostly because this podcast is brought to you by Ultimate Rod Case. If safeguarding your rods and reels is as important as the convenience of arriving with your gear pre-rigged and ready to go, then look no further than the Ultimate Rod Case. The Ultimate Rod Case is fused together from two solid pieces of 16-gauge diamond plate aluminum combined with stainless steel components, creating a completely rust-free rod case, which will mount to any roof or ladder rack. Your rods and reels are completely protected, enclosed in internal PVC rod tubes, which are hand-packed and insulated for thermal protection. With the longest warranty period in the industry, the Ultimate Rod Case protects your peace of mind as well. Handcrafted by the McCoy family in their shop in Colorado Springs, the Ultimate Rod Case is available in 2, 4, and 8 fly rod cases in lengths ranging from 9 to 12 feet, And they also make them for spinning rods. Now, I would say if somebody shows up with the spinning rod ultimate rod cases, I probably would not let them fish my pond. But they're available if you're so inclined. Visit them at ultimaterodcase.com for product information and photos, and follow them on Instagram and Facebook at Ultimate Rod Case. And remember, say no to plastic.
Damn right.
Bam. Right.
And I would also say that when you mentioned bait fishermen, BJ, I kind of hesitated a little bit there because I think there's more of our listeners that are bait fishing inclined than what we may have suspected, given the amount of hate that I received after the last podcast when I was kind of trashing bait fishers. So anyway, I didn't realize that we actually had listeners that were like, man, this fucking bait fishing hate is getting old. You know, and I'm like, not really. And I wasn't just hating on, I mean, dude, I'm all for, like, you know, plug cut herring for salmon and shit like that. But I'm talking about the motherfuckers with the styrofoam worm boxes that just throw the shit on the ground and leave it and fuck fish up and gut hook everything and then throw it back bleeding with its gill half hanging out and, you know, just litter all over the place. I realize that there are some legitimate fishing techniques that involve bait for harvesting fish. I'm totally fine with that. If it's legal to do so, if you're bottom bouncing with egg sacks or whatever for salmon or steelhead, or as long as they're legal to harvest and you're actually harvesting them. But if you bait fish, and like, I've seen dudes that are throwing dough balls and they're like ripping treble hooks out of trout's throats and then throwing them back in the water. That's bullshit. So if you don't do that kind of shit, then you shouldn't be getting upset that I'm trashing people who do. If you do that kind of shit, then fuck you. It's a joke, not a dick. Don't take it so hard.
Well, you can call me a dick because I think it's all fucking stupid. Yeah. I'm not even kidding you. So, I mean, unless you're a kid, you don't need to be bait fishing, dude. So fuck off.
Fuck right the fuck off.
Yes, you have.
As Uncle Wayne would say, suck this dick right here.
Right here, dude.
Right here.
Exactly.
Unless it's warm water species, because nobody cares about them. You can do whatever the fuck you want.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Throw your corn for your fucking carp and catfish. It's all good.
Yeah.
Well, boys, I hate to cut you short. I got to go pick up my son. He's doing 2-a-days, and he's done at 8:15. So. I'm going to let you guys finish it on up. All right. Well, I'll talk to you more later. Yeah. Well, I got to pick him up at 8:15. It's 8:10. All right. You boys have fun.
All right. See you, dude.
All right, Robbie. See ya.
See you, bud.
Yep.
My.
Property owner is a slippery slope, man. You want to be a good guy, but you want to protect your shit. So.
Well, and it's a two-way street, too. I mean, I totally understand. You know, I think there's probably a lot of property owners who would be totally fine allowing people to fish on their property if everyone was respectful and, you know, left the place in as good or better condition as when they showed up.
Yeah.
But it just takes one fucking douchebag to go in there and fuck shit up for everybody else. And, sure. You know, that's the reality. And it sucks, but it is what it is. I mean, Tom Peterson was out, I don't know, 2-3 years ago, maybe longer. And we inadvertently trespassed on a dude's property. We had no intention of doing so. In fact, I was explaining to Tom what we were just talking about, you know, the property rights in Colorado, and that, you know, if it's private on one side, then it's private out to the middle of the river. And, you know, we saw a sign that said private. And I said, well, you know, we looked all up and down the river on the other side, didn't see anything. And upstream from that was a public a bridge crossing, which was public access. And there was a park. So I said, oh, we can go up here and cross and fish our way down the other side. And we started fishing. And I don't know, maybe 15, 20 minutes into us fishing and catching fish and having a good time, I hear this like side by side fire up and start coming down, getting closer and closer to the river. And I just kind of jokingly said to Tom, I go, I think we're about to get kicked out of here, bud. And he's like, huh? And this old man comes down to the river and he's like, how's the fishing? And I'm like, oh, it's really good, man. We're having a great time. And he said, do you know that this is private? And I said, oh man, I'm really sorry. I said, no, we're out of here. Sorry. I said, we looked up and down the river, didn't see any signs. And he's like, oh yeah, the sign's over here. And he like pulls back all this like overgrown willow and shit. And there's, sure enough, there's a sign that's like completely buried. And so I'm like, oh, sorry, bro. Like, we didn't mean to trespass. And then we started chatting with the guy and he's like, well, you know, how are you doing? And oh, we caught a couple rainbows, a couple nice browns. I said, my buddy's here from out of town. And he said, you know, Tom introduced himself and said, you know, Tom Peterson. And the guy's like, oh, Peterson from wherever. He's like, I'm a Peterson too. And I just kind of joked and I said, no, it's an E-N, not an O-N. So, you know, you guys aren't related. And then the dude was like totally chill and he's like, yeah, I don't mind. You guys can stay and fish. I just, you know, I'd prefer it if you'd come up to the house and ask permission. And I said, oh, dude, we totally would have if we had known, you know, if we had seen the sign. So then he's like, all right, well, have a good time. And you guys, you know, stay as long as you want kind of thing. And I offered to the dude, I said, look, I said, hey, if you want, like, I mean, the guy was probably in his 80s or so. He drove down in the side by side and walked down to the river to talk to us. But you could tell he wasn't like not any hop in his step, so to speak. So I offered. Right. I said, hey, man, if you want, like, I'd be more than happy to come back up and bring my gear up and cut all this willow back and everything and trim all this stuff along the river so that your sign's not buried. And he's like, oh, gosh, that'd be really great. You know, and I wasn't like, well, if you let me fish here, I'll help you. I just offered, you know, and I, of course, I'm thinking, well, maybe if I do that, he'll let me fish. That'd be cool. But I was just offering just to be a nice guy. And, you know, I said, hey, man, here's my info. If you want to holler at me and let me know when works for you, we'll figure out a time. I'll come up and trim all this shit back for you. So I never did hear from the guy. I mean, whatever. But, you know, it's like interactions with law enforcement or whatever, or anybody in your entire world, like how you approach them often dictates how the conversation goes. If you're a dick about something, they're going to be a dick right back, you know. And you're in the wrong too. It's like, if you're in the wrong, just own it and be like, oh man, I fucked up, you know?
Yep. 100%.
And then you don't screw it up for the next person.
There's a wild rainbow trout stream not super far from me that you can no longer access because, you know, I fished it a number of times, and it's a really awesome little tiny creek. And it was fly fishermen showed up with two car full of dudes. And, you know, this is in like, it's pretty much in a small, it's not in a residential area, but, you know, it was the creek's probably 6 feet across, and there was, you know, six people fishing this place, man. And, yeah. Property owners got pissed and said, that's it. You're done.
Yeah. No. And you can't blame them, man.
No, I don't.
No.
So.
Now, what pisses me off is when the property owners like string fucking barbed wire across the river and shit, when it's actually like a navigable river, when it's a river that people float and do shit like that. And these assholes string fucking barbed wire across it. That's some bullshit. They shouldn't allow that. And I don't think it is allowed. They just fucking do it because they're entitled.
Yep.
They think they are. But hey, you know, if I owned it, I'd probably do that shit because I'm an asshole. But that's probably not going to happen. So I can pretend like I wouldn't.
I just shoot holes and rafts from my house. That's what I do.
Yeah. Right.
I know. I'd put barbed wire like just under the surface so that it just rips the shit out of their fucking rafts.
Yep.
Oh, man.
Fuckers.
Well, you know, if you got that kind of money where you can afford a place like that, you know, I don't have a lot of, it's hard to have a lot of sympathy for you for having those kinds of problems.
Yeah,
no shit, man.
Right or wrong. Like, I would take on those issues just to be able to afford to have, you know, a half a mile of fishable, floatable river on my property. That'd be pretty badass.
Yeah. Oh, BG disappeared. There he is.
Oh, dang.
Yeah.
BG, well, shit, guys, we keep kicking all these subjects down for the next episode. Running maybe, out of time.
Maybe here in weeks we'll get to some of these.
Yeah, we need to do a no fishing report, just subject episode, and just crank a bunch of that shit off.
Yeah.
There you go. I won't fish. I'll stop fishing until our next episode. Then the top section will go super quick.
Don't stop fishing, because then there'll be nothing to talk about.
That's it.
Then we can get to all of our subjects.
Yeah, we'll sound like a bunch of angry old men yelling at clouds then. That's all we got left after that.
All right. We haven't fished since the last podcast. Fuck this place.
Yep.
Work, work, work. Cool. All right, fellas.
All right, gents. You guys have a good evening.
Yeah. Good catching up.
Get some sleep, Steve.
Yeah, I got to get some sleep because I got to get up at 3. That way I can get to the office by 4.
Yeah, that blows.
Damn, dude.
Yeah, it sucks, dude.
Yeah, don't call me on your way to work.
Yeah, huh?
No, you guys don't want a phone call?
You can call me.
I'll be BJ because it's like 5 o'clock. I'm like, yeah. I'll be BJ right now if I wanted to.
I'll be driving. Yeah, right. If you called me, so.
Yeah.
Oh, dude. I'd be snoozing.
So,
I'd be pissed off if my phone rang that early.
Hell yeah.
So would my wife.
Yes.
I'd get my ass beat for that.
You gentlemen now have Steve's a nice.
Like, oh, so I am going to call him.
Yeah, so I will call Scott. I get it now.
We'll put his cell phone in the show notes for everybody.
Yes.
Yeah. For a good time.
For good time
at 3 a.m. call.
Cool.
Yes, sir. All
right, dudes.
All right, boys. You have a good one.
Yep, you too.
All right.
See you now.
Peace.
Later.
Keep me in your heart for a while. If I leave you, it doesn't mean I love you any less. Keep me in your heart for a while. When you get up in the morning and you see that crazy sun, keep me in your heart for a while. There's a train leaving nightly called when all is said and done. Keep me in your heart for a while. Sha-la-la-la. Heart for a while. Sha la 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 la. Keep me in your heart for a while. Sometimes when you're doing simple things around the house, maybe you'll think of me and smile. You know I'm tied to you like the buttons on your blouse. Keep me in your heart for a while. Hold me in your thoughts. Take me to your dreams. Touch me as I'm falling. And I will be right next to you. Engine drivers headed north to Pleasant Street. Keep me in your heart for a while. These wheels keep turning, but they're running out of steam. Keep me in your heart for a while. heart for a while. Sha la 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 la. Keep me in your heart for a while.